regulator for the South African Communications, Broadcasting and Postal Services Sector. You are going to present to us the annual report of ICASS, the successes and the challenges. We have been seeing you on the papers, on the TV, so we would like to know what are your challenges and what have you done and what are you going to do to those that you haven't been able to fulfill. Honorable members, I think now we know each other, but we've got Brenda and Marcia. Apparently, when we were the secretary to the committee was communicating with ICASA, someone from ICASA thought they were communicating for yesterday's meeting that happened in the National Assembly, of which I think we must make it very, very clear that we are the Select Committee on Communications. You must tell her that we say she must know that Parliament consists of two houses, the Portfolio Committee, the National Assembly, and the National Council of Provinces. So the committee in the National Assembly is the Portfolio Committee on Communications, which is chaired by the Honorable Member Vadi. And this one is a Select Committee on Communications, and she mustn't actually mess with this committee, because we won't accept that at the last minute it looks like we haven't communicated properly. So we'll take the message, and we must tell Mr. Makile that we were very much upset with what happened. Over to you. I think the two of you, you can introduce yourself, your positions, and then the members. Since maybe it's the first time you come to this committee, I'm Priscilla Kemba, a member of the committee and the chairperson of the Select Committee on Communications. But it's Labour Public Enterprise. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm Herman Groenewald, also a member of this important committee.
Rasiriti Tau, a member of the Select Committee from the Northern Cape.
I'm Bruselo Chikotis, a member from the Free State Province.
I'm Zolam Lenzana, member of the committee from the Eastern Cape.
I'm Mabija, member of this committee from Limpopo.
Good morning. I'm Dirk Selma, member of the committee, Gauteng.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the members of the committee. Thank you, Chair, for understanding our predicament and also to share what we have shared with you with regard to the challenges that we experienced regarding us coming here to make presentation to your committee. Thank you for that. As the chairperson has introduced us, my name is Brenda Ntombela. I'm a counselor at ICASA.
And my name is Marcia Bukwa. I'm also a counselor at ICASA. I just need to add that our chairperson, Paris Mashile, is currently in Canada presenting a paper on behalf of the authority and the country on regulatory issues, specifically the IEC conference in Canada. So his apologies are extended. It is just unfortunate that the two coincided and he'd made bookings and preparations some time back. I will, however, communicate the message as indicated by the chairperson. Thank you very much.
Chair, in terms of the numbers that we have as council, we are currently 8. So as the Councillor Sotua has mentioned, 2 councillors are overseas. 2 councillors are overseas, that is the chairperson as well as the councillor Van Rooyen. And then we have 3 other councillors that have gone back to the office because of the media briefing that we're going to be having this afternoon. And then one of our colleagues unfortunately fell ill day before yesterday. She's admitted in one of the hospitals here. And then we couldn't come with our support staff because of the urgency of the situation. Thank you. Chairperson, in terms of our annual report, we would like to share with you the following. We are going to have our presentation as such. We'll talk to our mandate and look at our structure. We will look at council regulatory projects, and then we'll also look at the operations. These are the projects that are done by the staff, and we'll go through them by looking at the different divisions that we have. We've got the licensing division, markets and competition, engineering and technology, consumer affairs, legal and the CCC, which is our compliance and compliant committee, communications and international relations, human resources, administration, information technology and services, as well as finance. We'll start with the mandate. For ICASA to operate, it is mandated by the ICASA Act, as well as the Electronic Communications Act. We also are doing our services with regard to what is prescribed in the Postal Services Act. We also take into consideration what the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa says. And in our processes and procedures, we also take into consideration what is prescribed by PAJA. It's the Administration and Justice Act. Right. As well as the...
You must say in full so that member.
Okay. No. All right. And then lastly, we have the Public Finance Management Act that drives our finance issues. Then the structure of the organization. We have the chairperson and 7 members of the council. So all in all, it's 8, as I have said. Then we have the CEO. And then we have general managers. We have 9 general managers. 15 senior managers. Managers are 39. The rest of the staff, general staff, we have 261 people. Then the total staff of ICASA is 335. Out of that total staff, we are having the mandate, which is driven by our strategic plan and the goals of the organization. It's 1, to liberalize the sector, also to look at regulatory certainty, and then we also look at service delivery operation issues, strategic alignment, as well as business intelligence. Our operational goals further look at developing integrated ICASA implementation. We also look at the plan, and the project resourcing, as well as governance. We also look at engaging our stakeholders. And lastly, we look at the corporate scorecard, as well as its measurements. Looking at council regulatory projects, before I go to the council regulatory projects, I would like to explain that
council or councillors, Madam Chair, they are full-time councillors. So we've got projects that we do which are prescribed within the ICASA Act as well as the Electronic Communications Act. So those are different projects that are looking specifically to regulatory issues as well as licensing issues. And then the operational issues are the ones that are looking at the day-to-day projects of the organization. So when it comes to the licensing issues under regulatory projects, I'm going to hand over to Councillor Sotswiko.
Thank you very much, Councillor Ntombela. Licensing has definitely been our major accomplishment for the previous financial year. And why do I say this? In terms of the ECA, we had to convert numerous licenses, which I've just enumerated here. I'll go through them just now. We had to convert all those licenses by the end of the financial year, beginning of this year, 19 January. And it was a very tight deadline. It involved prescribing the licensing framework, the standards and conditions applicable to those licensing framework, agreeing to how the license is converted from the old dispensation of the Telecommunications Act to the new act, which is the Electronic Patients Act. It was no small task. Staff, and I'm really thankful to the staff of ICASA for this, worked weekends without being paid for overtime in some cases to meet the 19 January deadline as stipulated in legislation. And just to go through these various licenses, we converted the new licensing framework as per the ECA, which is individual and class licenses. And in that scope, we developed 96 class community broadcasting licenses, three class low power sound broadcasting licenses, one class community TV license, 13 individual commercial sound broadcasting license, one individual subscription broadcasting license, one individual commercial free-to-air license, three individual public broadcasting service licenses, those are the SABC licenses. The 18 public sound broadcasting licenses, those are again SABC licenses. 534 telecommunications network services licenses, and I'm sure you are all aware of the Altec judgment, which converted a numerous number of value-added network service licenses into much bigger licenses, the equivalent of the Telcom license that we know in terms of the previous legislation. And of course, spectrum licenses, numerous spectrum licenses. There are countless. We just didn't capture them here. And for that, that was really our absolute accomplishment for that financial year. It took a lot of staff energy and council converging during the December period to deliver on the license conversion. And of course, along with license conversion comes the licensing fees framework, which talked to the converted licenses. And along with that project, we came to, after obviously an eventful consultation process, we developed the license fees regulations, and obviously there are adjustments. Initially, the likes of Vodacom and MTN and Cell C were going to pay around about 5% of revenue. And we felt we couldn't impose the same 5% of revenue framework to the new players in the game, and because our whole modus operandi was to, as indicated earlier, focus on liberalizing the sector as part of our strategic objective. So the council decided as key to liberalizing the sector, we would reduce the barriers to entry. So obviously, along with that, we reduced the licensing framework, made it more equitable. And I must say, it is quite an experience when industry doesn't take you through litigation And in terms of the license fees regulations, we have not experienced litigation. Of course, there is one player who is very unhappy, and that is Telkom, and you will see in a new financial year, or you will definitely see it in the court cases, that Telkom has taken us to court because they're not happy with the license fee, the additional fee they have to pay. We must recall that in terms of the Telecommunications Act, government was soft on Telkom, and it paid a rather low license fee. And of course, in terms of the new dispensation, they have to pay equitable license fees, and so their license fee went up. Then we developed the licensing process and procedures regulations, again, with so that the converted licenses know how to apply when they submit applications, know how to renew their licenses, know how to amend their licenses, and even for a matter of fact, surrender licenses. So those procedures are now in place in terms of legislation. The required forms and license fees that go with these application processes, we call them administrative processes, have also been prescribed in law. Again, that process was litigation free, and like I've indicated earlier on, it is a rather relieving experience if you can go through any formulation of any regulation without litigation. Then we, of course, developed the license exemptions regulations, and these regulations speak to the group of licensees who don't need a license per se to conduct their businesses. They are often the people who, the groups who use the ISM band, which is the unregulated spectrum, to conduct their services, like your security services, your, I'm trying to think of the ones we have in Johannesburg, I can't think of any we have in the Western Cape, but ADT falls into mind, you know, your security services, so they use radio devices. Your remote access services as well. Those are the groups that we are speaking about here. And of course, there will be also license supple. In addition to licensing projects, we then also have the marketing competition projects, and of course, the one that you definitely are aware of is the interconnection project, which has experienced rather unusual media attention. For reasons that we'll explain shortly, but interconnection falls into the market and competitions framework. And if you look at Chapter 10, which is again, I'm sure you've now heard of the famous Chapter 10, that is said to give the regulator, regulators, that is, I think, members of the members of parliament, a huge headache is the demands of Chapter 10. Chapter 10, and I've said this yesterday and I will repeat it, is a complicated process. It is economics intensive. It is the field of specialists, and I must say at least for once not lawyers, but economists. And so I think lawyers have had to sit aside and allow the economists to have their field play. And Chapter 10 is really designed that way. It is a demanding chapter. My short analysis is that it will require at least 20 regulations. And unfortunately, the way the Act is structured, Chapter 10 is structured, these regulations in some cases have to happen simultaneously. But we don't have the capacity within ICASA to develop the regulations at the pace required by Chapter 10. It is also budget intensive. So far we spent 20 million on consultants, and unfortunately these consultants are based in the UK, which has extensive experience in implementation of competition, and the whole competition framework, costing, etc. It's very new to South Africa, and as a result it obviously has its challenges. It's not easy. People still have to acquire the skills and understanding required in terms of Chapter 10. Nevertheless, the Chapter 10 framework is what we have focused on in the previous financial year, the financial year discussed in the annual report. And coming to agreeing with industry on the competition framework was not an easy process, but we believe we finally done this. we have accordingly developed the mask carrying regulations, and I'm sure you would recall, I think earlier last year, when MultiChoice was having a public spat with SABC on mask carry, and mask carry really talks to carrying SABC content on the MultiChoice channels or the MultiChoice service. And the question was, should MultiChoice be paying to carry this content? Should the SABC be getting revenue? And so, of course, we developed regulations, and we hope they were balanced. We have, again, much experience litigation in terms of development of those regulations. Then we have the Universal Service and Access Fund, and fortunately, Councillor Ntombela was involved in this fund. She would speak more to it, but basically, this fund seeks to collect money from all the operators in the sector, including the broadcasters. It collects these funds in order to support what we call rural development ICT services. And obviously, we have to work with the Universal Access and Service Agency, USASA, and they have to develop their program of action. And hopefully this budget will feed into their projects. As I know, at the beginning of this year, Minister of Communications, Honourable Minister Sipire, indicated that he'd use the funds for the digital migration process. And we are quite excited because I think the people riding the rural areas will benefit extensively if they can get to, for instance, to watch the 2010 the World Cup soccer with the new set-top boxes at a subsidized rate. So that's what the Universal Service Fund, at least we understood from Minister, is going to be used for. Of course, then we have a digital migration project. Yes, in this particular regulation, we experienced challenges from UTV, and at least we've managed to avoid court action. We've revised the digital migration regulations, and we believe they're just about to be finalized. Am I correct, Councillor Ntombela? Yes. The national elections regulations, we are quite happy to say at least ICASA conducted the process with transparency. And again, we must thank Councillor Ntombela for her efforts because she basically, did this single-handed and it was challenge-free. We were very grateful. She really exerted her efforts in this regard. Then, of course, we have the draft advertising regulations, again, to manage how advertisers manage their content on our broadcasting services. And we believe these regulations will go in a long way on managing content. We don't want to see our broadcasters, flooding our content with commercials. And not focusing on substantive content. So this is what the regulation is really designed for. Then we have the Universal Postal Services, Unreserved Postal Services regulations, and again, these were litigation free as far as I know. Then we have the Engineering and Technology regulations. We've drafted the Radio Frequency Plan, and of course, this we do in cooperation with the Department of Communication as per legislation. The Radio Frequency Identification regulations, similarly. These regulations are designed to support industry in their use of spectrum. Then, of course, we did also publish the findings document on high demand spectrum, and this project really comes from it emerged as a result of demand from industry, but also in terms of the requirement in terms of the ECA. Industry is demanding a particular set of spectrum. In my mind, it's the 2.6 gig and the 3.5 gig that they are focusing on, and obviously it's they want to deliver commercial services. However, we can't dish out the spectrum for free, it's just like sweets. This is what we indicated the other day. We have to have a framework, and this is what this regulation is designed to do. And of course, we hope that the money is collected, obviously, then go to Treasury.
In the long term, we would like to see those monies move from Treasury and directly into development of rural infrastructure for dispersed communities. And of course, we have the draft retro broadcasting frequency plan that we also hope to finalize in this particular financial year. And of course, we have to do this in close cooperation with DOC. We can't do it in terms of the legislation through CASA's operations alone. Councillor Ntombela will now speak to consumer affairs.
Thanks, Madam Chair and members. When it comes to the consumer affairs, the regulations that have been published are as follows. We have the End User Subscriber Service Charter, and this charter is actually looking at the minimum standards that are supposed to be met by the operators when they are rendering the services. And I'm sure committee members will remember that sometime last year or during the beginning of this year, there was a lot that was said on media with regards to the drop calls and all those issues. So they fall under this particular end user subscriber service charter. Another regulation that was passed under consumer affairs is the one that looks at the conveyance of mail. This is looking at how mail is conveyed from the person who is a sender up till the time mail reaches the person who receives it. It actually is looking at the conveyors of mail, whether it is within the reserved sector or the unreserved sector. The reserved sector being the one that is reserved for the South African Postal Service, and then the unreserved one is the one that is reserved for the courier services. Another regulation that was passed was the one on e-rate. And, well, this year we are actually looking at reviewing those e-rate regulations. But the regulations that are there right now are in force, and everyone is aware that e-rate is looking at 50% discount that is offered to the ECS that is rendering the service to the schools. We also looked at the regulations on 112 emergency. These regulations are actually looking at the emergency number, which is 112, that can be dialed by any user from any type of a phone, and then you'll be able to get emergency assistance. Within operations, we are going to continue to look at the issues that are done by the staff. Again, I'm going to hand over to Councillor Sotua to talk to the licensing issues.
What we've presented to you thus far are council-led projects. Now, these are largely led by our divisions, which is our staff, our general managers, our managers, and our senior managers. And so that they then undertake to do monitoring and evaluation of all licensees, compliance, and complaints. And we're going to speak to all of those in the next coming slides. Starting with licensees, the division licensed 25, we call them USALF, Universal Service Access License, or underserviced service licensees. And then we also issued several trial licenses for digital migration, given the fact that the switch on date was earlier on this year. I think it's due November. And then we had the registration of courier companies in the unreserved postal services. Compliance, we've conducted monitoring in all provinces, and this is the first time we've managed to do this holistically. Set up customer care standards, again, for the licenses to be aware of. And postal delivery point rollout. In terms of the markets and competitions division, we have we've undertaken at a divisional level competition. Competition and market analysis, filed 36 interconnection agreements. Remember earlier I talked about interconnection. This is what is in the media currently. Interconnection is largely a bilateral arrangement. It's based on a bilateral arrangement between two entities. One who has a service called Peter and another, one who offers a service from Peter to Jerry. Peter wants to call Jerry, he has to get onto a network. And to get onto that network, in some cases, he moves from Vodacom's network to Vodacom's network, if Jerry happens to be on the same network, or he will use from one network, which is Vodacom, to South Sea. Now, in that arrangement, South Sea has to pay Vodacom something to allow Peter to speak on the network. And it sounds pretty simple, but in terms of cost, it's not so simple. Because the way the mobile infrastructure works, it uses spectrum, and it uses computers which are linked to the network, and which also link to, obviously, the spectrum in the usage. I'm trying to simplify so that, you know, because I don't think that the public fully understands how complicated this is. At the same time, they use base stations. Now, base stations is where the intelligence of the entire system is based. And I'm sure you've seen them. It's also based on antennas. I'm sure you've seen them, red and white poles sticking out in various places, sometimes in the form of palm trees. Those are antennas. And those antennas speak to each other. So Jerry innocently makes his call to Peter. He's not aware of how, you know, where his voice, the voice call, how it's transmitted before it gets to Jerry. And of course, Vodacom, in the process of linking with South Sea, is going to charge South Sea. The current dispute is how much Vodacom must pay South Sea and how much South Sea must pay Vodacom. And the clear indication, at least from the authority, is that whatever Vodacom pays South Sea or South Sea pays Vodacom, that cost they transfer to poor Peter or Jerry. That cost is 1.25 rand at the moment. And as the question is that fair? Should Vodacom be transferring that 1.25? Vodacom and South Sea be transferring that 1.25 to the consumer? That's where the question is. Unfortunately, the way the ECAS is structured, we cannot arbitrarily go to Vodacom and MTN and say, what you are doing is unethical, immoral, you certainly cannot do this. We, in terms of the ECAS, are restricted in law on how we determine the price for that service. So that constraint in law, unfortunately, is quite elaborate in Chapter 10. And yesterday we were asked by the honourable members, should we remove Chapter 10? And we said, not really. It won't solve our problems. Because Chapter 10 tells you how you must reach that figure, how you must deduce from 1.25 to the actual cost. It's a scientifically determined method. And of course, Vodacom is quite aware that that is what Chapter 10 says, and South Sea is accordingly aware of the process set out in Chapter 10. The authority has, and of course the question I've then been asked is, why have you not focused on this particular problem? You've had 4 or 5 years to do so. I'll say up front, it could be easy to answer that question. I could just say to you, no, I'm new at ICASA, I didn't know about the problem. But that is not the responsible way of responding to the issue. The real issue is that this, the formulation of this, of addressing this particular price structure, started in the Telecoms Act. Midway of implementing Telecoms Act, the ECA came in. So that meant a complete change in legislation, in how we conduct our work in terms of priorities, and in our strategy in terms of approaching reduction of costs. I have to indicate to the honourable members that interconnection alone is not going to reduce the cost. We need a holistic approach to the reduction of interconnection costs. And this holistic approach, at least as far as the regulator is concerned, is by linking certain aspects of the Act together. This is how we have looked at it. You need to address the issue of reduction of license fees so that the huge license fees are not transferred to the consumers. We have managed to do that thus far. The huge costs of spectrum are also not transferred to the consumers. We have managed that thus far. Reduce the barriers of entry so that those you no longer need to pay 300 million to get a license any longer, because that cost is transferred directly to the consumer again. So we reduce the entry cost for licensees. Then we are going to we've started looking at number portability. We've started looking at carrier pre-selection. Research is underway. We've started looking at the retail aspect as well. And we hope to, in the new financial year, bring these projects together so that as we reduce the interconnection fee, as we proceed with the process linked to Chapter 10 of reducing the interconnection fee, which is wholesale, we can also then focus on the retail aspect so that the operators don't reduce interconnection and suddenly increase retail. And, of course, that process needs to be followed in terms of Chapter 10. I just thought it was important that I try and explain that. I know we will probably get questions on that, but just a preliminary explanation, I hope, assists. So interconnection. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say that she must not be defensive here.
Okay.
She just has to make presentation, and we'll make our own deduction on her presentation.
Okay. All right. And then we have the we've conducted the economic analysis, which is of the telecom tariff regime, of the postal tariff regime, and of COWACAM. And COWACAM speaks to getting the cost allocations, the cost allocation manual, which speaks to providing a detailed cost of your operations of your business, basically. We process numbering applications, and of course these numbers speak to your cell phone numbers. The operators request numbers from the authority, and we permit them. And I'm sure you've noticed that the number regime has moved from 082 to 076 to 072. And, of course, we've also published the discussion paper on universal service and access. This is largely done with cooperation of the Universal Service and Access Agency. We've also conducted a postal market study. In terms of engineering and technology, we have published the radio frequency spectrum management regulations, the radio frequency spectrum licensing project. In terms of this particular one, the regulators required to come up with a processing of spectrum applications, renewals, and so forth. We have also started that project. We've processed 6,089 new applications for spectrum. Processed 39,658 renewals. Okay. And 2,053 new type approval. And type approval speaks to the approving of gadgets, components, technology, equipment brought in by operators.
there's another slide that will speak to this. We have processed at least 2,155 complaints. This is including billing, faulty handsets, number portability. Earlier, Councillor Ntombi talked about the end user subscriber regulations, and these speak to compliance with those regulations. We've conducted public education and awareness roadshows. We established a consumer representative forum. And again, a monitor of consumer regulations. We just thought we'd introduce this chart to show you the number of complaints we've addressed in terms of the different mobile operators. So we have MTN at 18%, Vodacom at 19%, Southie sitting at 19%, Neotel at 9% so far, resellers 1%, NWIP, iBurst, others 14%, Telkom took the trophy this year for at 21%, and ICASA related complaints 8%. Earlier on, I indicated how relieved we are every time we are not subject to litigation. And so we have a very busy legal division, given our litigious nature of our sector. And thus far, litigation on non-regulated matters is one. Litigation on labor-related matters, that is coming from internal at ICASA, two. Litigation regulatory matters, 13. We have a communications and international relations division. And this division really looks at ensuring that we, in terms of the ICASA Act and the ECA, align ourselves with what happens at a regional level, Africa-wide, and international level. At an international level, we are linked to the International Communications Union, and we have to attend some of the sessions, obligatory sessions, annually. The Universal Civil Postal Union, SAPU, the Pan-African Postal Union, okay, CRASA is the regional equivalent at SADC level, Communications Regulatory Association of Southern Africa, speaking at SADC level, SAPRA, again, the regulator, postal regulator at regional level, equivalent to SADC. SABA, the South African Broadcasting Association, again regional but linked only to broadcasting. And then, of course, we have the Association of African Regulators, which is a bigger a brother body which speaks to all the regulators on the continent. Yes, linked to the African Union. Yeah. Okay. And on administration, I will hand over to Councillor Ntombela.
Thank you, members. When it comes to administration, the organization has developed a number of administration business processes. We now have the registry where we keep a number of our registers as well as the documents that are supposed to be filed by the organization. One of the things that we keep in our register is the licensees themselves, so that we know as to how many people we have licensed. We also have security and access control processes. We also have got asset management, which is a very important function for the organization, where we check on our equipment and a number of infrastructure that is there within the organization. We have also started by the end of 2008-2009 financial year, we had started to look at the record and document management system, where we record a number of things that you do within the organization. For example, the minutes of the committees. We have shared with you that Council meets as committee, so we keep all those minutes. We also keep our filing system so that everybody knows as to how our recording and documentation is managed within the organization. Moving to human resources, The total staff of ICASA is 335, as we have seen when we were talking about our structure. And we have got 57% females. We pride ourselves for that. We also have got 84 people who are from the previously disadvantaged, who are the previously disadvantaged individuals. And then we also have six people who are under the category of differently abled or people who are disabled. ICASA, by the end of the financial year 2008-09, filled 58 out of 59 vacancies that were there. I must say to the committee, Madam Chair, that we were having a challenge when it came to the issue of the vacancies within the organization, especially because most of our employees or most of our staff is poached by the industry. So time and again, we have a challenge when it comes to this. So then we are happy to report that at least by the end of 2008-09, we were able to fill 58 out of 59 vacancies. We also are happy to share with the members of the select committee that we revised most of our employee relations policies to be in line with the legislation that is there currently. The issue of overtime, the issue of remuneration, also employee study assistance schemes, which most of the people would look at as the bursary schemes. Also, we looked at the disciplinary code and procedures. When it comes to information and technology, the organization has been able to implement Mimecast email management service. This is a service that is looking at the security system of the organization, as well as issues like the corporate identity, where we use our access cards and all that stuff. So we were using that Mimecast email management service. We also have implemented Firepass remote access. This Firepass remote access enables staff, especially senior management and counselors, to be able to access internet when one is working away from the office. So it's like an office away from the office, so that we are able to see as to what is happening within the office. The division has also been able to provide IT infrastructure for training room. We have a beautiful training room within ICASA, where a lot of training takes place when it comes to IT issues. We have updated a data recovery plan. This has been a challenge because most of the data or most of the files would get lost, and then we wouldn't know as to where to put this. But then because of this particular plan that has updated it, one found that it has been easy to have a lot of data because of a lot of data that we have, some of the data would actually disappear. So right now, we are having a data recovery plan that can accommodate all the data that we have as an organization. Lastly, under information and technology, we have implemented an asset tracking system, especially for computers and laptops, knowing very well that these are the devices that get lost very quickly, and it's easy for our division or the information and technology system to be able to track down all these issues. We also have established a right fax solution, which makes our lives easy in terms of receiving the faxes. Finance, risk, and audit issues. The total budget of ICASA for 2008-09 was 247 million rand. What is of importance from our side is that we have no qualified or we had or received no qualified report from the Auditor General, though there were some of the corrective action measures that we're supposed to take, especially in terms of internal controls. The internal audit function has been set up to be able to coordinate operational and financial units. We would like to thank the select committee for having invited us. Siyabonga, enkosi, baya danke. We would like to refer you to the yes, ibile re a leboga.
would refer you to our annual report, especially when it comes to the finance issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Councillor Ntombela and Councillor Sotiku. Malibong. Really, it was an informative presentation, and we will request you to actually, before you leave, to give us the copies. Yeah, the copies, because like now it's going to be difficult for us to refer to slides when we ask questions. I won't dwell much on that because it's Sikhulumile when we started, and it's not your fault. But as yesterday in the public service committee, the select committee, we had a presentation whereby, you know, it was there, even questions were typed on, and then it was so easy. The committee, you know, worked very well yesterday with a woman, who was presenting. So next time, not today, we'll do the same. Can we have questions from members? We heard of technology, we heard of the regulators, we heard of the consumers, the education awareness programs. Just that when you come to the select committee, we must know what is happening in provinces. In provinces, because we represent provinces. So members, over to you. Honorable Jacob.
Thanks, Chanda. Thanks for the presentation from the councillors. I don't know which slide is it. There was a slide there when Ms.
So Tsikwa.
She always referred that here it was litigation free. I just want to check. Seemingly, there are so many litigations that you receive. Can we maybe get the outcomes of those litigations? How many you have lost and how many you have won? And second to that, this issue of payment between the operators. I believe ICASA is a public institution. And what is your role to defend the public on these issues? Because I think it's important that people should not take the public for a ride. So it is your role that you need to defend the public so that we should not get exorbitant costs as the consumers. And also the public, we are even not even aware that we have to pay that kind of a money. So what is your role and how do you also inform the public on these issues? Because the public must know. Thanks.
Honorable Mlenzani.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Maybe Chairperson, your comment around the presentation on the slides, the SRV information contained in the annual report may to some extent bring problems for us to, like for instance, I was looking at human resource development. One is not now very sure of the actual employee contingent there, because on the slide you get 335, whereas in this document you get 536. But when you look at the percentages of women and the other employed, it's almost the same. Now, one is not very short. Then the second one is put the same question by Honorable Jacobs the other way around. A role play. Yeah. Correctly, Honorable Jacobs is saying these interconnection things will ultimately have a bearing to the public. And we, as MPs, are public representatives by definition and scope of work. But now one would want to check whose role mainly is it to begin to negotiate with this service provider. Would it then be correct for us at this level, be it as government or as MPs, be it in the form of a portfolio or a select committee, to engage this service provider? Or ours would be to impress upon yourself as the CASA that, look, please talk to these service providers, because we believe that you are the ones who from time to time engage them around these issues. And lastly, I don't want to use the term price fixing. Maybe it may have some other connotations, but I want to check, is there no way in the Act? I haven't read the Act. I'm raising this from an ignorant point of view. Is there no way of coming in as a CASA, regulate both the interconnection phase from one service provider to the other, and ultimately the charges, not necessarily fixing them, but saying, look, this is the maximum that could be charged now by these poor, you know, individuals in public. Thanks, Chairman.
Okay, Honorable Rafi Riti, followed by Honorable Joseph.
Well, thank you. For obvious reasons, the main thing that's going to preoccupy us would be how best can we defend the interests of the poor and the working class, and therefore locate the role of ICASA in this particular context. So the sentiments that this committee obviously will express would not be that much different from the sentiments expressed by the portfolio committee in this particular instance. Because whether we like it or not, I mean, we operate in a capitalist environment, and with all respect to the Democratic Alliance, but we know, and the TA would agree with me on that one, that if the system allows capitalists a free role to play, they would not move away from the morality of capitalism. And what is the morality of capitalism? It's to draw the last blood. It's to enrich. It doesn't care. That's how it sets its moral standards. The main thing is about making money at whatever expense. Even if it means that the poor must suffer more, it will do that. And these companies, for obvious reasons, their objective is to maximize profit. And that's why, in the main, we would always say that we need a state or state institutions that are able to rise above some of these things and discipline capital. Can't be free for all, you know? So one hears the kind of argument, how difficult it is, and all those sorts of things. But what
Are we therefore saying that this is a state at a state of paralysis, where we can't do anything? It cannot be. It cannot be. So therefore, it becomes the central and strategic role of institutions such as ICASA to rise above in defense of the interests of the poor and the vulnerable in this particular instance. So it will obviously be important for us to impress upon ICASA to discipline capital in this particular instance. Of course, taking into account the constitutional framework and principles, it is in actual fact to a great extent. It takes into account a lot of bourgeois leanings. So we need to be careful of that as well. But the fundamental must be in defense of the poor. And what brings me to the annual report, which is quite interest, is the consumer affairs division. Because obviously your consumers again would be the poor complaining. The thing that I find quite lacking in the details is the kind of complaints. You just made an example of one, and I'm trying to get to the others. Yes, of course, you highlight the areas from the Eastern Cape up to the Northwest and those particular towns and so forth. But we don't get to know, okay, fine, here it is, under distribution of complaints across main complaint categories. It says billing. Billing accounts for about more than 20% of the complaints. But what about billing? You know, if we can know what are those things that people have complained about in relation to billing, and what is it that ICASA has done in dealing with those particular issues. Because others, I'm asking myself, visual airtime contract, what is visual airtime contract now? I'm not that literate when it comes to some of these things. So that we then get to know, we might be victims even, as we are seated here, without knowing some of these things that are put before us. Chair, I think now those are the major two issues I wanted to raise. And you know this pie chart, the pie chart. I realized that very strange. Cell C, Vodacom. And Telkom. Yeah, Cell C, Vodacom, and Telkom. Cell C presents itself as the most caring service provider. It has even introduced King 5 Rands, what was it called? There was an advert they ran on 5 Rands. Yeah, 5 Rands at a time. How do they call it? They coined it so nicely. But the impression that Cell C was communicating is that we are a very caring network or whatever institution. So much that we are able even to look at the interest of those who would ordinarily have a 10 rands to communicate. So with 5 rands, if you've got 5 rands, you can still say hello to your grandmother and so forth. But when I look at the complaints chat or distribution, I see it coming there. And I'm raising Cell C, Vodacom, and Telkom, which in the main should have played that strategic role, against the billing complaints that accounts for more than 20%. I just hope that it's not that 19, and 21, it's not on the billing system. Then, if that is the case, we've got a problem. And we will definitely have to get to know what the nature of the problem is, so that when we do what the Honorable Mlenza was speaking about on public education, because public education cannot only be a responsibility of ICASA, it is our responsibility as well. If I'm in my constituency, I must be able to say, listen here, in relation to this kind of problems, this is what can be done and so forth. Or even make it my responsibility also as a public representative to take up some of these issues on behalf of the community and so forth. But if we don't know what the nature of these problems are, we might not be able to do exactly that, to complement what ICASA would be doing in terms of public education and so forth. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Before I ask to make a follow-up question, I just want to check, is Telkom still a parastatal or is it no, totally private? No, I just want an immediate answer for that one. I want to make a question on that.
Telkom is the Pty Limited, so it is no longer parastatal.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was going to say, if it was a parastatal, how do you protect it from this capitalist sharks who are exploiting the working class and the poor. But the other issue that I want to know concerning the licenses, how far do you go in issuing of the licenses? Does it mean every time somebody wants to introduce a TV station, radio station, Vodacom or MTN and so on, you just issue licenses? Is it without limitations? Because maybe we are saying we are in a free market. Because I think some of the issues that are coming up, it is because of that. Because there's going to be a lot of competition, so now that's why people will be exploiting other people in order to make a profit. And also on the issue that was raised by Mr. Milanzan, on the issue of price fixing, when you discover there was a price fixing, what penalty is there for such a company? Because we are having this competition commission, which when it discovers that you have committed an error, there is a penalty that you are paying. So now, what recourse does the public have if they find that there's a price fixing between these operators?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, I listened to the two gentlemen about capitalism, and I think that's not a place to debate it now today. We can take it. I've got a lot of answers for you about that, but I think let's leave it there, and let's concentrate on what is going on here. I just have a few questions about, that's more for information from my side. The involvement of ICASA's in the digital migration we have at this stage in South Africa, it is busy, we are busy with it. How far is this, how far are we with it now at this stage? And are South Africa really ready to take it on and implement it in the whole of South Africa, or are we only ready to implement it in certain areas? So if you can tell us a bit more. And the subsidy we are going to have in it for the decoders from state side, how many will it be, and what is the total cost of a decoder when the consumer want to buy something like that? And then we've got a contract for the decoders. Are the factories in South Africa, or is it from other countries? And then the cable. There's a cable on the East Coast. We're busy with it at this stage. What is the cost of it? And how are South Africa involved in this cable? I read something in the newspapers about 2010, then it must be ready for the soccer. We connected it with the Europe countries. So if you can give us more clarification around that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll put my question in this session. I'll put my answer in this session. So there is a group of stakeholders who have applied for a telecommunication license, and ICASA expects them to submit a roll-out plan and shareholder structure. And they have difficulties in getting partnering with some other people. How do you assist in that regard so that they are able to get their license?
Thank you, Honourable Member and Chairperson. We just want to indicate that the litigation losses and won, and it's very difficult to give you an exact number, and it's because it's as follows. We are taken to court, and it usually takes the courts a number of years to decide on a matter. So the people who would have an exact figure of this is our litigation team in ICASA. They are not here, but going through pages 40 to 41, we haven't had a final answer from the judges on most of them. The only one that I can identify up front is the Vodacom versus ICASA. We know ICASA lost that case. And then the Altec Autopage versus ICASA. That is really a case between Minister of Communications and so it's DOC versus Altec Autopage. ICASA was a respondent. In that case, Altec Autopage won the case. And the as far as I know, DUCOM has not, we haven't had a final outcome of DUCOM. We haven't had a final outcome of Black Earth Communications. And WAPA joined Altec in the case against DOC, and obviously they won with Altec. In the directory solution, Len Marshall, those on page 42, as far as I know, I haven't really heard the final outcome, particularly with Radio Pulpit. And the others are internal litigation matters on page 43, Sneyman versus Sulman, the CCMA findings have not been submitted to council yet, so it means that our legal division is still looking at ways of settling. Really what I can do, if you want the exact figures, I can promise to submit them to you by next week, having spoken to the litigation team who would have exact status of each one thus far, so in this financial year, because they all emerged in the financial year contained in the annual report, but let me give you the exact number in writing. So that's the litigation one. The next question was on interconnection definition. I'll allow Councillor Ntombela to respond to that one.
It was on defending the public. That is the second one. Interconnection definition, I think it's going to be yours, is number three. In terms of defending our public, the main thing that we do, first, it is when we look at the ICASA Act, one of the functions of ICASA, it is to protect the public. So that is basically what we need to do as a regulator. So it is in black and white. And then in doing that, the Consumer Affairs Division has been put up with special reference to Chapter 12 of the ECA,
when one looks at anything and everything that is under Chapter 12, it is addressing the issues of the consumers. Now, we go out there and do public education. Now, when we do public education, we educate the public on, one, their rights. Rights in terms of accessing the services, that is, the services of either telecoms, broadcasting, or posters. We also educate the public about the way how they can apply for licenses, like the information that has just been requested by Member Mabija. We also educate them on the regulations that we have published, because most of the communities and the public do not even know the types of regulations that we have published, especially when it comes to the regulations that are addressing the vulnerable people. For example, the ones on people with disabilities, we've got a code on people with disabilities. Anything that has got to do with free services like 112 regulations. So we want to make people to be aware of those regulations. We also educate them about how we check on the compliance of those regulations. And then the third thing that we do is we have open days where we call members of the public, even within the provinces. We go throughout the provinces. For example, this very last time, on the 15th of October, we were celebrating the World Post Day, which was celebrated in Limpopo. By rights, the World Post Day is on October 9, but it was celebrated on the 16th of October because most of the people were not available, like Minister and our Chairperson. Also, the World Telecommunications and Information Society Day. So we've got a theme where on that particular day, we educate the public on that very same theme. So if you can look at the report from Consumer Affairs, they are actually going to, they have listed all those types of public education, awareness creation, and all those things that are done to the public. I think I have covered a bit from, or just, you know, touched on the issues that the public, how the public is defended. Maybe I can move to a later question that was also asked with regard to the complaints, how we defend the public in terms of the complaints. The regulations that you spoke about, which are the End User and Subscriber Service Charter, towards the end of those regulations, there's a portion that talks about complaints handling, how the complaints are handled when they are brought to ICASA. First, we give an allowance to the complainant to complain to their service provider. And then after 14 days, if that person doesn't have or doesn't get joy out of how the complaint has been handled, then the complaint is brought to ICASA. And then we also go through our own 14 days to now investigate as to what is it that the operator has done for that particular complainant. If there is no joy from the complainant, then the matter can be escalated to the CCC, that is the Complaints and Compliance Committee. One thing about the CCC is that they penalize the operator. So if it happens that the operator has breached one of the regulations, then they are able to penalize that particular operator. And to talk about the issue of billing, whilst we're talking about the complaints procedures as well, in terms of billing, normally what happens is the client or the consumer is billed by the operator for services that the client does not know or is not aware of. For example, the main or the common complaint that is there in terms of billing is when people have decided to port, to move from one subscriber to another, service provider to another service provider. In cases of contracts, whether it is a prepaid or a postpaid. Now, if you are a postpaid customer or client, it does happen that you had signed a contract with the operator, which is actually saying that you are supposed to be paying that particular operator for 12 months or for 24 months or for whatever period that your contract is going to last. Now, what happens is most of the clients decide maybe to port midway. And when they port to another service provider, they think that the amount that is supposed to be paid to that service provider where they have been is going to cease. The fact that they have now moved from this service provider to another service provider, they think that everything is gone. So now the former service provider will continue to bill the client or will continue to bill the customer. So you'll find that most of the customers are going to complain about some such issues. Another way of another complaint that goes with billing, hence it just gives us a bigger graph, is that most of the service providers will also bill you for rental, okay? For example, the fixed line. And then people will think that rental is only maybe a once-off or it is paid, you know, on certain days or at a certain period. So that is why people are having lots and lots of problems when it comes to the billing. Some service providers even charge you for giving you the list of the calls that you have made. But other people wouldn't know that they have to pay for that particular list that has been given to them. So these are just the examples that I have given. Thanks, madam.
I think, Chair, what we wanted to know is that how do you penalize them? How do they get penalized? I mean, I was making this example of some of us might be victims here. I'm an empirical example. You take out a contract only to find out over and above what you are paying, you are also being billed for an email that you're not using. And then I'm told that, no, but we will have to check the records where I don't know about that thing. I never said I want an email account with you. Why are you charging me for an email account? I will battle that. That is my battle. I will be able to fight. But how many of our people are suffering the same thing out there who might not even be aware? And those who become aware, what is the penalty that these service providers are going to be given by ICASA? Because now I take it that for that is fraudulent. That is fraud, in actual fact, by some of these service providers.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Each and every regulation that passed by ICASA has a section at the end which is talking about the penalty. Okay? So, if it happens that in terms of giving you information, the service provider fails to give you information, again, there's going to be a penalty. And then that is covered under the code of conduct. Because we also have got regulations that are looking at the code of conduct for the licensees. And it's also covered under the same chapter 12 that I was talking about. So we have a code of conduct for the electronic communications network services. We've got a code of conduct for electronic communication services. We also have got a code of conduct for the postal services. So each and every one of those codes, at the end of the regulations, they've got the minimum amount that's supposed to be paid in terms of the subscriber that did not oblige with those standards. So that's how we penalize them. Okay. Now, when it comes to the issue of the numbers for the staff, Honorable Member, if you can look at page 50, that is where we have our totals. Page 50 of the annual report, if you look at the head count steps, we have, as you go down the line there. But what we decided to do with the presentation, under executive management, instead of that 10, we said CEO and then executive management because we wanted to pull out
the CEO as just as a post on its own. So that's where we take our 335. Thank you.
Honourable Member, earlier I wanted to understand whose role is it to negotiate? I think you are referring to the interconnection process.
Yes.
Yes. You see, what the authority did with the whole interconnection debacle, it looked at Chapter 10 and realized that Chapter 10 would take some time to implement. Our target date, Honourable Member, is in fact June the latest, June 2010, to come up with a cost base with a regulation that outlines the cost that the operators must pay for interconnection. So it realized that in the interim, what could be done? And that's a question we asked as the authority. Then we felt, well, let us engage the operators. The Act says we must consult as widely as possible in our work. So we consulted with the operators, we engaged them, and in fact, they initiated the process of speaking to the regulator on an interim solution on this cost, this 125 cents. We started engaging them. We were initially, of course, quite flexible and susceptible to engaging them, understanding what their dilemmas are, how what they are willing to do to change the negative sentiment around their cost. What sacrifices were they willing to make? And we started that engagement. Whether it is our place or not, we sought to find an interim solution whilst we were proceeding with implementation of the law set out in Chapter 10. And indeed, we believe that the operators, at least in the spirit that they engage ICASA, are quite concerned themselves about this cost. However, as we continued with the deliberations, we realized that they have their own challenges and they are not quite committed to get to a figure that would be acceptable or satisfactory to other players. Remember, we have value-added network service operators which have been converted, so we call them the small players in the market. They were not the big three. We call them Cell C, MTN, and Vodacom, could not come to a figure that satisfied this other group. So we discontinued discussions with them. Yes, and indeed, late this Friday afternoon, Vodacom and Cell C indicated that they had reached a figure. But that amount, which I think is 78 cents offhand, that amount is not satisfactory to the other small players. And their argument is that the interconnection wholesale price can come down further. We realized at that point that the operators, that is MTN, Cell C, and Vodacom, were not willing to come down further. So we've decided to basically discontinue that process, focus on our implementation of the legislation. We believe that mitigating factors are set aside, that is potential litigation. We could complete the process between March to June 2010. So there are many factors that come to play when we formulate regulations, availability of consultants and so forth, but the target date that we have set as the authority is between March to June 2010. We are following the steps as carefully as possible as set out in legislation to avoid litigation, because if we fast-track the process to such an extent that we don't follow the law, we'll be sitting in court, and we really do not want to be sitting on a court on a matter that is so critical. As I indicated earlier, we were averse to settling matters in court because it takes longer
then it could, if we could settle them between ourselves. So that is the process that is that's underway in terms of that. And so that is the role of the regulator. We sought to engage in the spirit of the operators initially, and then in terms of yes,
Honourable Jacob.
Yeah, Chair, I want to make a follow up connection on this issue of interconnection fee. I realize there's a lot of competition, no consultations between the operators. Where is the public in this instance? Because I think they are consulting among themselves, and the person who's going to be affected, it is the public. So what is the role of the public? How does the public come in this issue? Because I think it's important. And the other issue, this interconnection fee, this company, they are talking about themselves. They don't consult me to say, if I don't want to use cell C, if I don't want to be connected to cell C, maybe I want to connect to only to Vodacom, or I'm an MTN subscriber. I want to be connected to only Vodacom, but there is this cell C. I don't have a choice. They are just taking decisions on my behalf. So what is my involvement as a public? Or who is protecting my rights? Because I think in the whole process, I have to be consulted as the person who's going to use that facility.
Be, you know, brief and clear to the point, and because we still have other questions that we still want to ask. So don't drag.
What we do, the minute we publish the draft regulations, we do so in a transparent manner. And of course, we are going to formulate draft regulations speaking to interconnection. And in that process, we publish regulations and ensure that we hold public hearings. And it is at that point that the public is permitted to get involved in terms of legislation. Is that clear? Okay. Then there was another question on how do we control the price? In other words, you say not price fixing, but how do we control the interconnection price? The only room available to the authority is the Chapter 10 process, which sets out a labyrinth of processes required that the authority must follow step by step before it reaches the cost figure. And in fact, in Chapter 10, it's referred to as a remedy. It's amongst other ways of reducing the cost. So to be succinct, the authority or the powers of the regulator come from Chapter 10. However, it is within an identified process. There's a question of how do we defend the interests of the poor when our capitalists and mechanisms available. I hope Councillor Ntombela has covered that. Okay, then there's a question on are we in a free market? What penalty is there? And I wanted just to indicate, you see, Chapter 10 outlines what the regulator can do is pro-competitive measures. What we can do to discourage anti-competitive behavior. The Competition Commission comes in once you have already done anti-competitive things. So that's the difference between us and the Competition Commission. The penalties that the Competition Commission decides upon is based within their legislation. And we only really engage with the Competition Commission when we feel we have a dual jurisdiction. Other than that, they decide on the penalties once the Anti-Competitive Act has taken place. We don't get involved at all when the Anti-Competitive Act has been undertaken by an operator. So that is the distinct differences between ourselves.
And I think the other question was the East Coast Cable. The excitement around the East Coast Cable really is the broadband that it will that it introduces the room to let me explain this perhaps just very quickly. We have a pipe at the moment that, through which we we carry all our services, data or traffic, data, voice, and so on, or even images. This pipe is currently narrow. If there is a need, given the growth of the economic growth of this country, to widen this pipe. And this is really the essence of the East Coast Cable, is to introduce opportunities for wider pipes so that we can transmit data more efficiently. That's really the essence of it. And we are really excited about it. I think East Coast is just the beginning step. I'm sure there are going to be numerous other entities that are going to engage in this space. Of course, Vodacom have been conducting it via the 3G, and we all know the limitations around that. So we hope fiber, more fiber is going to be built in the structure and support the economy along the plans set out by our government. There is also another question about shareholder structure assistance for licensees. As an authority, we are very conscious of the problems around shareholder structures in licenses. And the one thing that worries us the most is fronting. And so we've been extremely vigilant about fronting. We are aware, of course, the challenges that the historically disadvantaged groups in this country face from all funding from banks, and the challenges they face in terms of joint ventures. And we have not been very lenient. And I think one can see this, particularly with the pay TV environment. We've been extremely stringent, including with new licensees. We ask them to submit that data so that we know the profile, the BEE profile of every single licensee. The legislation tells us that entities must be 30% BEE, and we want to ensure that 30% BEE is an effective participant in the operations of a company. We are extremely worried there was a case where domestic workers were having shares in a company, and we then probed and we found that the domestic workers didn't even know they had shares in a particular company, so they were not being paid for dividends. So we are very worried about that, and in the way we license new entrants, we invite financial experts to come in and analyze their shareholder structure. The real problem they face is really the funding from the bank. I hope I've covered your question. I'm not certain if I've satisfied your answer.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was a question from Member Hunewald with regards to involvement of ICASA on digital migration. Currently, we have received comments on the digital migration regulation. What happened was the first set was sent out or published for comments. Comments were made, and then we had some challenges from ETV based on the part that was dealing with the frequency plan and digital migration itself. Also, in terms of the times, remember the switch-on date for South Africa was supposed to be 1 November, but it hasn't taken place. But then what we did was to withdraw some portions of the regulations that were on RAS, as alluded to by ETV, and then we revised them. Then we sent them out for further comments. So tomorrow and on Friday, we're going to be holding public hearings on digital migration regulations. Hopefully, after the hearings, after Friday, then we'll be able to publish the final regulations. Now, coming to the issue of the set-top boxes. Set-top boxes are handled at a policy level, so they are the baby of Minister of Communications, even the issue of manufacturing of those set-top boxes is actually handled by both the ministry as well as the council that is responsible for digital migration. We as the regulator are only responsible for publishing the regulations. We would like to accept the fact that we did not publish these regulations before the 1st of November, but it didn't give us much of a challenge in the sense that the switch-on date itself did not take place on the 1st of November. So by the time we publish them, we will be able to cover even the issues that are related to the switch-on date. Another issue that was of interest to the public was the fact that digital migration should take place just before we watch a 2010 World Cup. So we hope that our communities within the provinces, within the communities, in the municipalities as well, they will be able to watch it by then.
To respond to the question that the Honorable Mabija asked?
Yes, shareholder structure, but not the rollout plan, madam.
Okay. Can you respond before she leaves, please?
Every applicant in our process and procedures regulations needs to provide, in the process of submitting the application form, their rollout plan, so that we can also, as a country, know who is where on the map. And they make commitments on how they're going to roll out that infrastructure, the time frames, and the business structure. And it is critical we have that information because a license is a very valuable asset, and we want to be certain that they are making good use of that asset because there are certain rights that come with it. Yes, it also, in the process of knowing exactly the map or the rollout of the licensee, where the network is, we are able to better monitor the compliance with regulations. It has helped us. Also, then we are able to understand how far the spread is, urban and rural, of the networks. We are able to make plans and accordingly license new applicants in new areas.
There was also a question on how far do we go in issuing licenses. I think in that case, we spoke to the regulations that are looking at processes and procedures for applying for licenses. There is a process and there is a procedure that is supposed to be followed when somebody is applying for a license. So in a way, there is, in inverted commas, a way of controlling as to who and which company is supposed to have or to be granted a license or to be issued with a license. One of the conditions is the one that has just been alluded to by Councillor Patrick. Another one is your HDI within that company, and many more, and whether you do have the infrastructure when it comes to that. But then let me just hasten to say that there's a difference that is there when it comes to applying for a license for a community as well as for a commercial radio station or a commercial television or anything that is of commercial in nature vis-a-vis anything that is of community in nature. Because when it comes to community issues, the process regulations and procedures mainly concentrate on the percentage of the community that is going to have access to that particular service. Anything that has got to do with community is actually of importance when it comes to that. Another way of inviting people to apply or companies to apply for licenses is to send out what is called invitation to apply. The invitation to apply is normally published for the sake, again, of trying to control as to the number of people that are supposed to have the licenses. We don't just do this willy-nilly. It's also done based on the Act. The ECA states exactly which types of licenses the regulator is supposed to have invitations for people to apply. Also taking into consideration Section 5-6 of the Act in terms of liberalization. Another way of doing it is to educate people and tell them, especially when it comes to the community radio stations, to say on quarterly basis the regulator is going to expect the communities to apply for community radio stations or community television. So that's how we look at the issue of licensing.
On page 49, you said to us 57% are female. But if I look here, females are 43%. And then total males is 57.
Yeah. But, Honorable Chair. That is actually a graph or a table that is giving us employee development figures. It's not about the staff establishment. It's about employee development figures that we have developed so many people, as in training people.
Okay, you know, the way it is, you are looking on page 48. I'm said page 50, not 49, 50.
Oh, 50. I'm sorry.
Okay. 50 total.
Yes.
Females 43%. Total males 57%. And then if you look, females are also underrepresented.
Social media.
At management level.
Total female
43. Because it's.
Oh, yes. Okay. You can respond to that.
Before you respond, let me give you another one. If you look at also at page 55, maybe you can clarify. That's why I was saying if we had on BEE, page, let's say 55. Page 57. The merger between Chris Hani and Vembe district municipalities. When is this going to be finalized? Because, you know, to date the merger process is not yet been finalized. What's the delay? If maybe we can clarify as what is really the delay, because if on the annual report you just say today the major process is not yet finalized, you could not finalize the major process, you know. What is your problem then? And then also on the licensing division, the registration of new courier companies in the universal postal services. You granted entities to seek provide unreserved postal services to register for providing parcels. My the division also conducted workshops to create awareness about the registration process for the provision of unreserved postal services in KwaZulu-Natal province, Newcastle. Was the workshop just for KwaZulu-Natal, or was it for all provinces but held in KwaZulu-Natal? Or if it was only KwaZulu-Natal, what empowerment are you doing to other provinces? There's a question mark if you see only one province and you don't see the other provinces. And in all the progress that you made in all these provinces, I just want to know what, how do you do? Do you really go to this radio station as ICASA? Do you have a slot in Barberton radio station to talk to the people who are listening to Barberton radio station, or to whatever radio station in Muleti with the local language for the people to understand that when you talk about ICASA, what is ICASA and what are the benefits, you know, for them to benefit from ICASA. Members, I don't know whether there are still some questions that you want to add. But definitely, as I was saying, you know, this is an annual report. It needs time to look at it so that when we just receive this. So can you respond?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Indeed, the female representation has been a sore point. At council alone, we are 3 women out of the total 9. There's a new member who's going to join us. He's male. And so we are 3 women in council alone. We've raised this as a concern. We've indicated to General Manager HR and the majority of the general managers that we really should be bringing women actively into the organization and escalating that. And I know that in terms of the training, they've opened it up more widely to women. We have indicated, at least at council, that there is a definite need to come up with a program, and hopefully we'll look at it in the next financial year, that would focus largely on ensuring that there's a certain target related to the management structure, a target set out specifically for women. So we'll look at that in the new financial year. And of course the challenges that have been identified, this is a fairly new sector, and it requires lots of induction and education so that women are attracted to the sector, and we hope things will improve. I remember in 1994, I was one amongst 3 women, and there were 1,000 men in the room. And so I really understand that it's an important prerogative. We will attend to it. Yes, Councillor Ntombela wants to speak to the question on 57% females in our slide.
I think that is a mistake in terms of what is reflected here. 57% is supposed to be for males, not for females. Apologies about that.
Copies that are incorrect and wrong information is going to even to the Ministry of Women, Youth and what. When they look at this, when we post questions, then they get the wrong information.
Honourable Chair, this will change straight away. And I think it's but maybe one of the mistakes that we have made. Yes, thank you for that.
Yes, the mergers between the districts, the delay is largely unhappiness between the entities. They are reluctant to merge. They've got issues about what are the consequences in terms of shareholders and dividend matters, and I must submit it has been quite difficult because they were not happy with that requirement to merge. They felt they were never sufficiently consulted to merge. And I think we need to review that imposition because I think they are correct. We should have consulted them more closely before the legislation was made. I think if entities don't want to be merged, they should not be merged. In any case, the law tells us that we may not intervene in commercial transactions between entities. So we will observe that, Honourable Member. The slots, I think both Councillor Ntombela and I will answer this from different perspectives. as a regulator, we have to be careful because we license the entities and they charge for airtime. So we have to be careful in the manner in which we use them to advocate for the authority. It's a fine balance, but we have attempted to do it when we need to explain our regulations and our processes. And I know specifically with regards to the elections, Councillor Ntobla was able to talk, and the consumer activism in ICASA.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair. With regards to, let me just start with those commuter rail stations and the radio itself, especially when it comes to language. As part of the license conditions, each and every applicant is supposed to indicate the percentage of the languages that are supposed to be, that are going to be used in when they broadcast in that particular area. So language is very important. Like Honorable Chair has mentioned, if a radio station is going to be in an area that is predominantly Sesotho, then it has to be, you know, it must get a larger percentage of that particular language. So we are very strict when it comes to that. Hence, even the response that I gave to the Honourable Member to say that when it comes to licensing, especially when it comes to the community radio or TV, we are very serious about that because we need to serve that particular community. Now, coming to the unreserved postal services, the registration, the empowerment, these are some of the public education projects that have been started by the Consumer Affairs Division. So by going to Newcastle, it didn't necessarily mean that most of the courier companies or unreserved postal services are rendered within Newcastle. But in a way, when one looks at the numbers that are there throughout the country, one will find that there are a lot of unreserved postal services that are rendered in a certain province. So, like, for example, Gauteng. So we do have those numbers. All in all, we have about 300 courier companies that are registered with ICASA. So that was like starting when it comes to the workshops that we have done. Remember, Honorable Councillor, ICASA previously was regulating only the broadcasting sector as well as the electronic communication sector or the telecommunication sector. Only in 2006, it started regulating even the postal sector. So anything that has got to do with postal regulation is, in inverted commas, new for ICASA.
Members, are there still questions? Mr. Honorable Mlenza?
Chairperson, there are questions, but in line with what you raised, maybe one will appeal to your good self as the chairpersons of the two committees which we usually sit. Because the more we read this annual report, the more we are picking up on issues. And I would appeal to you, Chair, that not necessarily now, but during the course of the financial year, if we find space, that we can once more ask the ICASA to come to the committee. Otherwise, because the more they speak, the more we begin to read and begin to pick up issues. But we cannot conclude that whilst they are here with us. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. We will do as requested. It's the first time we meet with the ICASA, and we will still, before the end of financial year, we will still meet with them. But let me, at this point in time, thank all the honorable members. I know we are busy in the, we are few in the NCOP, and we serve in many committees. Hence you see members being called, you know, that the meeting at such and such a place is sitting. And then also, like, really we would like to thank you also for coming, though there was a bit of inconvenience, but we still communicate properly. We tell that whoever it is that we are existing. We are a committee. And in that note, I would like to thank you and honorable members, and you are only invited to single line. Quarter to one. Can you ask them to come up? And then, honorable members, thank you for all the contributions.
Thank you, honorable chair. Would like to thank the members of the committee. We also would like to thank for your indulgence, you know, for us to finish things late, because we actually didn't sleep. We were preparing this overnight, yeah. So thank you for that. And we know that during the first half of the financial year, we normally are invited even to present our strategic plan. So we would like to come and address the committee on our strategic plan, because when we start with the plan, at least the committee will have an idea of what we have planned for that particular year, so that when we come with the annual report, then the committee can actually interrogate us, having understood even where we started when it comes to the strategic plan itself. Thank you.
On you around around the thing. Capitalist. Yeah, no, 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 no